When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Those at the summit are watching Bryce ascend. Quote, Declan couldn't believe what he was seeing as the Autumn King fell to his knees. It's not, the Autumn King breathed. It's not possible. She is alone. Tears streamed down Sabine's harsh face as she whispered, No, she isn't.
Fucking stab me now.
Right?
Like, the love you feel from parent to child for both of them.
Yeah.
You can't deny that.
No. I would just rather SJM spit in my face than to put me through this heartache.
I will say, I think this moment justifies Sabine's continued hatred of Bryce.
I agree. That's why I'm not a Sabine truther.
You're an Autumn King truther.
Yes.
I do freaking love Hunt's attempt to revive Bryce with his lightning and, like, CPR. And how he screams at her. It's great. It's a great way to break up all the sadness and bittersweetness.
Yeah.
And bring us back to what we're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And that's ragging on each other.
I mean, it's like a parallel of, like, Hunt or Danica was just a sassy.
Yeah, that's true.
And now Hunt is just a sassy, and that's what Bryce needs.
Yeah.
So this is what Hunt is saying to Bryce as he's electrocuting her heart and pumping her chest and everything. He says, quote, I heard what you said. What you waited until I was almost dead, you fucking coward. Now come and say it to my face. Like, it's just so many emotions. I just, like, kept rereading it so much of, like, now come and say it to my face.
You would say that.
I would. I love it so much.
I do too.
I'm not crying. I'm holding it together.
You are holding it together. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Now, this is where I'm going to get into really talking about Bryce's power. And it starts with the first sentence of chapter 94. And it's something that I took for granted until I was preparing notes. Quote, she was sea and sky and stone and blood and wings and earth and stars and darkness and light and bone and flame. Now, why is this relevant? Going back to something Jack quoted in chapter 92, from Declan's point of view, we get, quote, Bryce dropped further into power, past the normal, respectable levels. The power of the gates, the power given over by every soul who has ever touched it, every soul who has handed over a drop of their magic. People of every house, every race, millions and millions of drops of power fueled the solar drop. And as Bryce ascends, we see her experience what it means to be of every race and every house. She experiences it all during the ascent. I like to think that this has lasting impacts for Bryce. So she's always been an empathetic person. Mm-hmm. We know that she cares about those who cannot take care of themselves because she's like a wolf in that way. However, I suspect that what she's not cognizant of that we're seeing right now is as she takes on the power of all these different people of different races, as she experiences what it means to be them as she goes through her ascent, that her capacity for empathy increases tenfold. And I think that's why we see what we see, especially in book three.
I'm linking this to her power and why I'm okay. I'm leaning more into it. Again, spoiler for book three. I'm slowly wrapping my head around the fact that she's actually not powerful and her power is always based off of other people's powers. Mm-hmm. I do like the idea of her being more empathetic and fighting for everyone because mm-hmm. she's now is part of everyone. Mm-hmm. I really would have liked more of that then. Because this is such an interesting concept of like her powers are borrowed.
Yeah.
Her powers was everyone else's sacrifice.
Yeah.
Her powers were given to her as a blessing from the gates.
Yeah.
For her sacrifice.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And I think I would, maybe it is played out and I just never really noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm on board. I need to be more on board. I'll let you know after we do book two and three.
Okay.
How on board I am.
Hopefully we remember.
Yeah.
Quote, Bryce barreled higher. She could feel the surface nearby, the thin veil between this place and life. Her power shifted, dancing between forms and gifts. She thrust upward with a push of a mighty tail, twisted and rose with a sweep of vast wings. She was all things, and yet herself. I do agree. I do wish we saw more of this. Mm-hmm. And like you said, maybe we do and we're just not aware. But I think that is a lost opportunity if we don't see more of it.
I wonder if this is also a clue for book three that, and I hope people understood that to be a spoiler alert, that all Fae come from one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it's like, wow, we really are one.
Yeah.
Like we are all Fae. We are all just one species, really.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. And I also wanted to note that that first sentence specifically calls out sea, sky, blood, earth, and flame. And those are all parts of each of the houses.
Oh, yeah.
As Bryce comes back to life, and as I read the rest of the end of this novel, I can't even begin to process why any of us thought Bryce and Hunt were not endgame.
Right.
Quote, he saved her and she'd saved him. His power felt it coming a moment later, recognized her like seeing itself in a mirror. They have been mirroring each other since day one of this novel, and it's just really layered and masterful.
Yeah. The last time we saw them being referenced as mirrors, they were fake mirrors because they were struggling through their own deceptions. And here they are being true mirrors again. And to your point, like the fact that, you know, what's funny is I didn't see your note. When I wrote my note, we both wrote, how did we not know they were endgame? And it is really funny. Like, even leading up to book three, people were still not convinced that Hunt was endgame.
Yeah.
It is funny how much we choose not to read or understand or process or accept as readers.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, SJM spells it out for us.
Yeah. Even at one point, I was like rooting for Cat Daddy.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Hunt thinks some really amazing things about how he was born for this moment, which I'm going to wait to discuss in the breadcrumbs. But it also just adds more gravitas to this moment and how, again, I'm like, let this man love this woman. Like, right? He is endgame.
Right.
We do get this beautiful image once Bryce is alive and they're holding each other that I think really demonstrates not only the dynamics of Bryce and Hunt's relationship, but also the purity of it. Quote, inside the wall of velvet soft wings, like a sun contained inside a flower bud, Bryce shone. Hunt already stared down at her, his wings unfurling like petals at dawn. And it just made this image of Hunt being the flower to Bryce's sun, that he's going to follow her path no matter where she goes. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful.
It's so sweet. And like, you have this beautiful moment, which then immediately goes into their token banter. Bryce says first, quote, did you just call me a fucking coward? So what if I did? Too bad all that healing first light didn't turn you into a decent person. Where would the fun in that be, Quinlan? They're just so back to normal. And I feel like it's also a sign to the reader of like, it's okay.
Yeah.
We're done now.
Yeah.
We're back to normal. We are here. You guys can breathe easy now.
Yeah. I won't cause any more adrenaline inducing horror or trauma to you.
It really is a sign from SJM of being like, it's done. Yeah. Like all this climax? You made it, kids.
Yeah, the climax is over.
Here we are.
In the afterglow.
In the afterglow, I need aftercare.
And so do Bryce and Hunt. And so they rush home at the start of chapter 95. I think
they need pre-care.
They go to wash up and escape the aftermath of the battle because, you know, now that the battle's over, people are coming out. They're looking at who's alive, who's dead, and it's not a pretty sight. And rightfully so, they want to go check on Syrinx. And when Bryce hugs Syrinx, she just begins to, like, allow herself to feel all the trauma and starts sobbing.
Yeah.
And I love how Hunt picks up the both of them and carries them to the bed and they cuddle. And it's just a cute little family unit.
And Syrinx looks Hunt's face. And they're just all having a moment. And then we finally get to see the infamous eight-pointed star. Quote, just down the V-neck of her t-shirt, a white splotch, an eight-pointed star, now scarred the place between her breasts. Hunt chuckled. I like it. Some part of her did too. It's a physical manifestation of Bryce's power beyond the light. Like, it's just going to be a constant reminder of not just what she did, but who she is. And the fact that she kind of likes it too, a part of her likes it. It's the beginning of acceptance and ownership in her coming into her own power. And here at first, people, I think this isn't controversial, but I'm like, yeah, no, this makes sense. Her coming into her own power in book two and accepting it is going to be her accepting, like, no, I need to take down the Asteri. Like, there is no one without the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can almost say, like, this reminder on her chest is going to be, it's a constant reminder of what they did too.
Yeah.
Of this day. It is a scar that she has to see every single day.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Even though it's beautiful and it represents the Starborn, it is also a manifestation of the trauma that she endured.
Yep. Yep.
That's not something she's going to let go. She can't let go.
No.
Like Hunt, Bryce senses, quote, that it all happened for a reason. She believed that. For this, for him. This is a concept, again, I left Hunt's point of view about this in the breadcrumbs. We'll discuss it later. But Bryce carries this thought throughout the rest of the series. Like, this happened for a reason. Mm-hmm. I'm here for a reason. And that's not something she started this novel with. It's her experience here that has brought that about.
And there's no way you can have that thought and not embrace your Starborn power.
Right.
She cannot accept that I'm here for for a reason without her saying, well, yeah, I'm the first Starborn.
Right, right. She has to accept her power, and she has to accept the fallout from accepting that power, right? Yeah. There are a lot of consequences to this, and she embraces that as much as she's capable of. Whereas Hunt, being the simple boy that he is, is like, you know what? It was all for this moment, and it doesn't apply anymore. We fulfilled our destiny.
Yeah, and she was sitting here being like, I just
started.
I'm a star, like, you know, rune starborn, but, like, damn, I got some powers.
Right, right. And I think this is a sign, this concept, this thought process is going to be the point of contention, where she accepts there's still destiny to fulfill, and Hunt is like, nope, we've done enough.
It's the gravitas. Like, she understands pretty quickly what her power means.
SJM has to no segue here. SJM has to tease us one more time with the threat of sex.
How dare she.
And what I am going to pay attention to is Hunt's use of sweetheart, and it has been such a journey for sweetheart. You know, Bryce reminds Hunt that he promised to fuck her until she couldn't remember her name, and he tells her, quote, if that's what you want, sweetheart, that's what I'll give you.
Ooh.
And, you know, first, damn you, SJM. But also, you know, sweetheart went from mocking and derogatory to now being, and then being endearing and now being full of promise.
Yeah.
And meaning. And it's just,
it's so great.
It's great.
But no one's the biggest cockblock as SJM did, as SJM is. Hashtag remember Lorcan. Hashtag Lorcan did. Hashtag what did Lorcan do? justice for Lorcan.
Even though there's no ties to Lorcan right now.
The tie is
cock block.
Fade to black.
Yeah, that's fair.
How she's cock blocking me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Sex for Hunt and Bryce, and I almost said Reese and Farrah, and you'll see why, are very healing. It is very healing. Quote, the words she wanted to say clogged in her throat, so she hoped he understood them as she pressed a kiss to his now clear brow, sketched a line of soft glancing kisses over every inch where the tattoo had been. And we talk a lot about this in the ACOTAR season, where sex is healing for Reese and Farrah. And I can't wait to look into, I keep saying this, but like, I can't wait to look into HOSAB, because I bet it's not healing for them until they're mates. And I bet it's a mate thing. That
spoiler.
At this point, if you haven't accepted that we spoiled that they're mates, you're saving spoiler for episode 15 that they're mates.
I think we've definitely said it early on without the spoiler warning.
Many times. People have to accept this about us. Remember in the first episode when we recorded it, we're like, we were really good about not spoiling anything.
Were we?
Yeah, we were cocky. But I bet this has something to do with mates and healing. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that. At one point, Bryce tells her mom that she's going to open a chain restaurant, beach-themed restaurants, and it just, I'm like, SJM likes Margaritaville, too!
I could see her in Times Square.
Margaritaville with us?
Yeah.
Amy and I love a Margaritaville.
I love Margaritaville.
Some of Hunt's insecurities start to trickle in. Quote, he'd wanted to kiss her when the light of her power had faded, when Hunt had lowered his wings to find her in his arms, looking up at him like he was worth something, like he was all she needed. End of story. No one had ever looked at him like that. And he feels strong now, but when Bryce needs more, and she's going to need more for their future to be solid, that's when he's going to waver so much. Because right now, you can really see his worth and him claiming his worth as she needs me.
Yeah.
At one point, she needs their future, not him.
Yeah.
While he needs her, not their future.
Yep. Yeah. And that's going to be a hard line for him. While Bryce talks to Ember on the phone, because Ember was the, you know, mothers have to be the traditional cock block.
Yeah.
Bryce reflects on Micah's death, and it starts to cause dread in her more than it causes joy, because she realizes there are consequences that have not been dealt with, and she doesn't know what to do about it. And I love this image that SJM writes, and I want to remind everyone, this was before the song Ivy by Taylor Swift.
I was one to know.
Quote, dread grew like ivy inside her, creeping through her veins, wrapping around her bones, and squeezing tight. And I thought this was just a great way to remind us that, like, hey guys, there's more books coming.
Yeah.
You better like not get comfy just yet, because I'm about to slap you with some stuff.
Yep.
So what is that stuff? What are the consequences? We get a hint of it at the end of chapter 95, and we really see that start to play out in chapter 96. Rigelus, the bright hand of the Asteri, which I always forget that he's the leader because he's a teenage fey boy, calls Bryce to offer her a gift, which really means he's threatening her, as all good villains do. Quote, we trust that this favor will serve as a reminder for you and Hunt Athalar. It is our deepest wish that you remain in the city and live out your days in peace and contentment, that you use your ancestor's gift to bring yourself joy and refrain from using the other gift inked upon you. Now, what I don't like about this sequence, personally, is the fact that Bryce has to translate everything Rigelus says in her own head. We know she can read between the lines. I know I can read between the lines. And I just feel like I'm being patronized by SJM.
I understand. And let me read the translations, basically, real fast. Quote, use your starlight as a party trick and never, ever use the horn. We will destroy you. Stay in your lane. I feel like it needs to be spelled out, because this is absolute pure setup for book two, that SJM can't leave any wiggle room for what they're trying to get across.
My instinct was, no shit, Sherlock. It's all I kept saying in my own head.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is obvious, but she just needs to make it clear under no uncertain terms.
Yeah.
This is book two.
Yeah, Rigelus is not being nice. Let's not sugarcoat this the way we sugarcoat everyone else in this book.
Yeah.
Yep. This is a direct threat.
Yep.
That's fair. Regardless of how I feel about the narrative style, though, I do appreciate the power moves that Rigelus is making.
Of course you would.
Of course I would. Rigelus calls Bryce out of the blue, likely to an unlisted home phone number. So that's creepy AF.
Yeah. No, he's star 89 or star. You were in China. Fuck.
Oh, is that like no caller ID?
Yeah, you could like do a
mask your number
yeah. thing. You're in China.
I was in China.
No, the joy of calling the boy you like.
Is that what you would do?
No, that's what I was trying to say my friends, but I didn't have too many friends. It's what other girls at the party would do. And I would just be like, no chance in hell.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Rigelus also gives Hunt freedom in an effort to control Bryce and Hunt's actions so that they won't have a reason to rebel against the Asteri, at least not immediately. And Rigelus also threatens Bryce to stay silent and makes it clear he knows who her mother is. Quote, "The threat gleamed sharp as a knife, one step out of line, and they knew where to strike first." And basically, Rigelus has her cornered, and I really, really appreciate that. He was playing a game of chess that Bryce didn't even know was going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good deal.
It is. Like, if you want to be complacent, it's a great life.
Look, he freed Hunt.
Yeah.
He's not going to punish either of them for killing an archangel.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
They didn't have to free Hunt.
Yeah.
That was just like an extra little cherry on top.
Right. It's called a bribe.
And why are they wrong? Why are bribes wrong? I'm willing to be silenced. I'm capable of being real quiet. Yeah, no. How horrible of them. This, she should fight back. This is not good. Am I believable? No.
You answered it for yourself.
And because Bryce has to end this book with weaponizing the feminine, because this is who she's been from the beginning, Hunt gets ready to go to just clean up everyone's shit. Mm-hmm. And he asks Bryce, quote, "Want to come play scary asshole with me?" Bryce smiled. "I have just the outfit." And it's like, you know, weaponizing the feminine. Like, she's to the end.
Because just because you go through trauma doesn't mean you change 100% as a person.
No, you can always...
You can still wear a great outfit.
Wear a great outfit.
On their way to the Comitium, Bryce and Hunt run into Rune and Company, and oops, I think I forgot that they existed.
I forgot you existed.
I knew the song. I didn't know what you were doing when you went,
I respect that. I may not have sung it perfectly.
It's okay.
And I thought that it would kill me, but it didn't. All right.
Everything about the interaction between Rune and Bryce simultaneously gives me cute aggression. But also
It makes me want to punch Rune in the face and then kiss him.
Yeah.
Because of how
a kiss with a fist.
Stupid cute he is. Yeah.
Quote, "You're my sister." Rune didn't bother to keep his voice down. No, there was pride in his voice. And damn if that didn't hit her in the heart. "I don't care if I'm called Prince or Starborn or the Chosen One or any of that." He grabbed her hand. "The only thing I want to be called right now is your brother."
Fine, impregnate me. Dear God. Like, there is nothing more attractive in life than a good brother.
Yeah.
To, like, a sister. Mm-hmm. I'm sold.
Too bad all my brothers are taken. I'm sorry.
Also, it's different.
No, I know. I'm teasing.
Well, I'm like,
I do have one brother who isn't taken.
Well, also, they don't do that to you.
No, I know. I was playing on the best friend's
older brother. Yeah. No, I respect that. I mean, you're Hannah's listening. Your brothers are lovely.
I also want to know how Rune no longer calls his father or our father. Instead, when he speaks of him at this point, Rune calls him the Autumn King and puts distance between the two of them, which I respect.
Yeah.
That he's no longer, It's a signal that he's not going to step in line the way that he was at the beginning of this book.
Rune is fixing his mistake. He is picking Bryce over the Autumn King. Also, I'm reflecting on Rune and Hunt. And again, my mind just keeps going into Hosab because that's where our focus will be in the next upcoming months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go into being besties.
Yeah.
And it is, I'm like, I kind of was like, I forget how long they hate each other in this book. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, like, they were in that helicopter together. Rune saw Hunt jump out of the air, out of the helicopter to save her. Mm-hmm. They were both went through the trauma. Hunt realized he'll never have to go through that threesome. Like, there's just so many things that they've accepted them. Like, okay, it does make sense that they'd be besties.
Yeah, I mean, I think they became besties when they both didn't let her sell herself to Sandriel for Hunt.
Yeah, nothing brings closer together than stopping human trafficking.
that is right. At the end of the chapter, after Rune leaves, quote, Bryce looked to the rooftop across the street, where the angel still waited for her, a shadow against the night, but no longer the shadow of death. And this change is important, and it goes back to something I said earlier in this episode. That there's been a change in identity. Hunt has shed his Umbra Mortis persona. Remember, he's been baptized. He's been forgiven of his sins. And from the ashes of, you know, I'm mixing all sorts of metaphors here.
Yeah.
He is someone new. And he might still have this shadowy past. And he might still have shadows in his heart. But he is not the assassin for the governor anymore. And it's just like Bryce has kind of shed, even though she's got her own sassiness, she's not that vapid party girl persona anymore.
Yep.
And this is really important. And it's a nod to book three that I didn't really register, because Hunt struggles with the loss of his Umbra Mortis identity.
Yeah.
In Flame and Shadow. I love who Hunt is. I love him not being the Umbra Mortis, but he has to go through processing this, and it's kind of a delayed processing cycle.
It is. I do appreciate that this is being told from Bryce's point of view,
mm-hmm.
because this is Bryce seeing Hunt as not the Umbra Mortis,
yeah.
but still identifying him as a shadow.
Yeah.
Shadow being like dark and scary, right? Yeah. And to your point, it is something that Hunt kind of struggles with, and his own loss of identity and everything. But it is poignant that this moment of healing
mm-hmm.
is Bryce's moment of healing and yeah. forgiveness and pardoning.
Yeah.
This is not Hunt's moment of all of that.
It's a great point.
So I am like the shit show that will be book two.
Excited.
So excited.
The final chapter, chapter 97, is a beautiful wrap up to this book. And there's just a lot of threads that get tied up that I really appreciate. So we're going to kind of run through some of them, but also some other random things.
Yeah. Were you saying my next note is random?
Yeah.
Cute moment alert. Thinking about how the Blue Court helped evacuate people. Quote, even the otters grabbed the smallest of the city's residents and carried them down to the Blue Court.
They have to be pretty fucking small.
I was thinking like little Lahabas, little sprites.
Yeah, that's fair. That's like, fair. I was thinking like squirrels.
They can die. It is fine. They ripped up enough of our plants. SJM needs to remind us that Bryce hates the Fae and why she does what she does for the third book, really. Quote, but the Fae, Fyro, had sustained the least damage. The Fae had suffered the least casualties. It was no surprise when their shields had been the first to go up and had not opened to allow anyone inside. That's all SJM writes on it. Just these little lines. And it's so subtle. And it's such an observation that she makes and does not reflect on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this one subtle observation goes into book three.
Yeah. Has major consequences.
It has huge consequences to the point where I'm wondering if it should have been a little bit more than subtle.
No.
All right. That's fair. All
because right, to me, what it says is Bryce festers on this.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yep.
And
she
does. And payback is a bitch.
Oh, she gonna come back? Is she going to bitch slap every single one? Mm-hmm. Just like, everyone, line up mm-hmm. for your bitch slap. Your Bryce slap.
One of the threads that we see tied up in this chapter is Bryce calls Juniper to make sure she's okay, but also to say, hey, tell Madame Kira I'm coming to dance.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice little sign that Bryce has truly begun to heal and move on from the grief that she felt for Danica. Because remember, she wasn't dancing because of the grief she had for Danica, because she couldn't feel anymore.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. And she's taking those steps to heal.
Yeah.
And then we see a final meaningful use of the cell phone, which, again, SJM has used really, really masterfully throughout this novel. And it mirrors the way it was used at the start.
Bryce reflects on the text from Danica and Connor. And remember that these are texts that she's basically memorized, reads them at her darkest moments, and they've only ever been associated with pain and darkness in her, essentially. Especially Connor's last text when he asks her to let him know when she's home safe. Quote, Bryce began typing. The answer it had taken her 2 years, nearly to the day, to write. I'm home. And it's so, like, over the top and dramatic and perfect.
It's so good.
I will eat this up all day long. Bryce has released the guilt from her heart and accepted to not feel guilty about healing either. And I love the drama. Yeah. And this is a dramatic moment.
It is a dramatic moment because Bryce is home because she's found and has Hunt.
Yes.
And because she's back to being who she wants to be.
Yep.
Or has set on that path. And why is Bryce home? It's because Hunt is her home and she's setting on the path of who she wants to be. And we're going to see a little cute little follow up later. But before we get there, we also see the cleansing power of Bryce in this moment and what she's experiencing. Quote, each swipe of her finger had her heart lightening, lifting with the rising sun. And I just think that's again, good use of the cell phone, B, just symbolic of her healing and her becoming her true self.
Yeah.
We get this beautiful moment where Bryce gets to glimpse the pack of devils on the other side of the Istros. Quote, revealing a grassy shore, rolling serene hills beyond, not a land of stone and gloom, but of light and green. And that's a little breadcrumb for something we see in Flame and Shadow. But I have to acknowledge that Bryce thinks that this is a gift from the Underking. And I only feel like that's not the case because I've read this entire series. Yeah. It definitely, this thought definitely throws off your expectations of the Underking for the next two books.
It's a great red herring.
It's a great red herring, and it pisses me off.
She got you.
She got me.
Hunt comes home, and when he comes home, he doesn't see Bryce, so he messages her, and she's like, I'm taking Syrinx for a walk. And he responds saying, like, cool, I'm making breakfast, which, perfect man right there. Mm-hmm. And this is such a return to their happy place. Yeah. This is a return to Hunt healing her with food. And they're getting right into their routine again. Yeah. This is like, I mean, because that's what they wanted, was this peace.
Yeah.
This little carved out moment of peace with them.
Yeah. Which I love. And I love that this moment happens. Hunt texts, I'm home, within just a handful of lines.
Yeah.
From Bryce texting, I'm home.
Yeah.
And it's just a really sweet parallel that they've found each other, that they do have peace.
That is really sweet. And SJM is a fan-freaking-tastic with her book endings and, like, the book marrying one each other and just how everything bookends one another. It just so happens that this book end happens at the end of the book. Quote, there was an angel in her apartment, which meant it must be any god's damn day of the week, which meant she had joy in her heart and her eyes set on the wide open road ahead. And it is an exact mirror to the very first line of the book. And I'm going to read the first line, quote, there was a wolf at the gallery door, which meant it must be Thursday, which meant Bryce must have been really god's damn tired if she relied on Danica's coming and going to figure out what day it was. And it just shows how far Bryce has come even before Danica's death. Mm-hmm. Bryce said she wasn't happy. She wasn't in a good place even before Danica died.
Yeah.
And here she is with the same sentence, the same thought, mirroring one another. And she's just so happy. And that's all the next two books are, is just pure fluff and them being happy and nothing wrong happens.
Yeah. Keep telling yourself that. Now we get into the epilogue. And prior to reading House of Flame and Shadow, the epilogue of Earth and Blood was kind of just a mystery to speculate on constantly. Now that we, at least...
Flame and Shadow spoiler throughout
I have a line that says, so we're just going to give you a few spoiler warnings now because this entire thing is breadcrumbs.
Yep.
Because there are so many nuggets, and it does reveal at least some of the things that SJM had planned ahead.
Yes. To me, this scene, I want to say with full confidence, knowing nothing, feels like one of the first things she wrote, and she wanted to work towards this.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. I would bet a fair amount of money that maybe not the first thing she wrote, but I bet she outlined and thought of this scene very early on in her development of this book.
I could see it.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes if it might have been like a prologue to book two. And she's like, let's put it in book one.
I like that. I like that.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So in this scene, we see Jessica in close proximity within writing, not physically, I'm sure it's physically also, but within the writing, two cypress trees. Quote, amusement tugged on Jessica's thin mouth, but she shifted her stare to the quiet park, the towering cypress still gleaming with dew. Now, we've talked before about how cypresses are sacred trees, and I think the proximity within the writing of these two things, Jessica and the cypress, is intentional because there was never a need to mention the cypress.
Yep.
The sentence could have ended before the mention of cypress. It could have just been a tree.
Yep.
But instead, because Jessica used to be a priestess and she's next to a sacred tree, I feel like this is intentional.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything she wrote here is intentional. Oh, yeah. I agree.
Adis also talks about Thea's light being a song in his blood and how he would recognize it anywhere. We learn more about their relationship in Flame and Shadow. And what's clear to me now more than ever, which I think I didn't realize, is how much Adis and Jessica did not know what Thea did with her star.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no clue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get the mention of Hunt's father, which at the end, the very last page of this book, is such a fucking hook.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't read this and then wait for Sky and Breath.
Yeah. You didn't come into, you came into all this at Sky and Breath.
At Sky and Breath. Adis says he thinks Athalar's father would have been proud and accuses Jessica of knowing the male best. And I think he's talking about Apollyon here.
Therian. Thacian. What's the one who cursed her?
Yeah, Apollyon.
I think it was Apollyon. I thought it was the one with the TH.
Oh, Thanatos?
Thanatos
no,
who did it.
I think no? It's Apollyon.
Okay, then yeah. Whoever was the one who cursed her the most.
Yeah, it's Apollyon.
The most. The one who cursed her, then yes.
I did note, because I was like, I couldn't tell it for a moment if he was talking about the Vanir father or the Prince of Hell father. And I was just like, you know what? Both Bryce and Hunt have two dads, and that's too many dads. That's too many dads.
Technically three dads.
What?
God, this is why I need to reread that book. And because we both read it in like a power read.
Yeah.
They created the super sperm.
Thanatos?
Thanatos and...
Apollyon.
Apollyon created the super sperm.
And then gave it to Hunt's mother.
Did they go straight into her? Or did it go...
into the guy.
And then into her.
I don't know. I can't remember. We'll get there eventually.
Super sperm. Cat Daddy asks about the library and to see if it's safe. When Jessica confirms that it is, he says, good. I feel like this would have been a breadcrumb to the Book of Breathings. It just wasn't fleshed out. And this is why I think this is one of those first things that she wrote versus something that was like that she did towards the end where maybe she might have had a little bit more planning. And one is this concept of the Book of Breathings.
Yeah.
She left a huge freaking clue with the Book of Breathings here.
Yeah.
And that huge freaking clue was like teased up in Hosab and then zero follow through.
Yeah.
In Crescent City 3.
Yeah.
This felt like a big lead up for me. And that's why I also feel like she might not have known everything.
Yeah.
Because Cat Daddy says like Hunt's father, who you're familiar with. We've already established Hunt has, at the very least, two fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why, like, the, you know, that doesn't, he would have said fathers.
Yeah.
But that would have been too much of a spoiler. Because I'm wondering if she didn't add the fathers aspect until later.
Maybe.
So, just more breadcrumbs and thoughts. Thoughts that one day, SJM will tell me.
Well, and that wraps up our analysis. So let's get into the very last set.
Wow, that was our analysis.
That was our analysis. We did it. Now into non-multiverse breadcrumbs. In chapter 91, quote, Randall had told Bryce about the terrible power of the Asterion Guard's brimstone missiles, how the spells had woven into the condensed angelic magic, slowed healing in Vaitnir long enough for them to bleed out, to die. I suppose that isn't that far of a jump from this to parasites in the water. At least it's not surprising coming from the Asteri.
Truth. Also in chapter 91, Bryce says to Hunt as he's dying, we're going home where Syrinx is waiting for us. We're going to go home. You and me together, we'll have that afterwards like you promised. They're going to have it at the end of this book and at the end of Flame and Shadow.
Yeah, yeah. But in the way she means, end of Flame and Shadow.
Yeah, yeah.
In chapter 92, quote, Bryce dropped further into power, past the normal respectable levels, the power of the gates, the power given over by every soul who had ever touched it, every soul who had handed over a drop of their magic. People of every house, every race, millions and millions of drops of power fueled the solar drop. Then it is fitting that Bryce is the queen that will unite all the peoples and free them from the Asteri with the power the people gave her.
She's not the queen of all the people. She's just the queen of the Fae.
She is the queen
of the Fae.
Of the Fae, who will unite all the peoples. She unites people.
She does unite people. This is not me with your note. This is me with SJM note right now. Because I agree, she is the queen that helps unite. But she's not the queen of everyone. Because even though she dismantles the hierarchy with just the Fae, has nothing to do with the Myrrh.
Yeah, or the angels.
Or the angels.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Again, this isn't to you. This is my confusion to everything. In chapter 94, Hunt, as he's trying to revive Bryce as she ascends, quote, he had fallen. He had survived. He had gone through every trial and torture and horror, all for this moment, so that he could be there. It had all been for her, for Bryce. He had been waiting for her from the moment he was born. Because, like, he quite literally was created for that with the super sperm.
Yeah.
And it is kind of fun that he's electrocuting her. And that's, like, all he does in the next two books.
Yeah. Well, it's like an AED.
No, I know what he's doing. But I'm just saying, like, he actually does continue to do that.
Yeah, it's true. Still in chapter 94, Bryce, once she has ascended, feels like her power belongs, quote, not only to her, but to all of them. Hence why she fights for all of Midgard.
In chapter 97, quote, odds of the next governor of Albara being decent were slim to none. But Bryce didn't dwell on that. She defied the odds yesterday. So maybe the gods would throw them another bone and convince the Asteri to send someone who wasn't a psychopath. It's a mixed bag, you know, with Celestina, unfortunately. But I think you got your wish, Bryce.
She's not a psychopath. Last but not least, our multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs. In chapter 92, quote, the lights flowed down the ley lines between the gates, connecting them along the main avenues. It formed a perfect six-pointed star. It reminds me of the star in Feyre's engagement ring. Maybe not relevant, but it could be someday.
There's also Nesta's tattoo.
Hers is an eight-pointed star.
Yeah.
But this is a six-pointed star.
Yes, but that's fair. But the Bryce's scar is an eight-pointed star.
Right.
But I see what you're saying. The six-pointed star was the lights.
So, yeah, the six-pointed star is the lights, which reflects Feyre's ring, which also, I have to acknowledge, sounds like the Star of David.
Yeah.
And if we talked, I think, earlier in this season about this being like a crisis of faith journey for SJM.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it ends with the image of the Star of David.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. In chapter 95, Hunt and Bryce notice that, quote, just visible down the V-neck of her t-shirt, a white splotch, an eight-pointed star, now scarred the place between her breasts. Now the eight-pointed star. which is a motif we see in Prithian, the eight-pointed star, especially in Silver Flames.
That's right.
And this week's final Bryce-ism is light it up.
Light it up, Danica. Light it up. So, Jack.
Yes.
How do we feel at the end of this novel?
Emotionally wrecked. I still applaud SJM. I know there's so many things that, you know, we kind of poke holes at here and there. How does her leg get free? How to, you know, what is the Autumn King good? Like, there's so many things that we debate on. And if that's all we're debating on, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're nitpicking.
Yeah. Which we are.
Then she wrote a good book.
Yeah. Even with all the nitpicking, she still wrote a great book.
Mm-hmm.
You and I went into this pretty early on being like, this is one of her best books.
Yeah.
Is it our favorite? No, I'm still a sucker for ACOTAR, but I think this is one of her most well done books.
Oh yeah. You can see the labor of love in this book, the careful thought and planning. And the first time I read it, did I feel like it meandered? But I knew it was for a reason, but it still could have been shorter. Absolutely. Now I feel very strongly that this is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Especially this end sequence. In the last few chapters that last few episodes that we've recorded, everything is so intentional and so brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even imagine being an author at this stage of a book being like, oh my God, I just want to be done with this.
Imagine,
I just want to be done drafting.
Imagine you writing your first draft and being like, fuck, now I have to reread this whole thing over and over.
Yeah. I will say, though, this is probably the most fun thing to write is probably this sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like, you know, you mentioned the idea of like how it initially felt like it meandered, and I get it. Like, me too. It was like, we got a lot of things that we're telling, that you're trying to tell us here. And analyzing it intensely, you can see like, wow, there is no meandering. Everything is purposeful. And I think about A Happy Hermit, Lily. And something that she said to us was like, SJM can be read at any level. Mm-hmm. If you want to read it on the surface level, which I did. This is no shade to anyone who, when they first read it, was like, this is a weird book. I mean, we did the same thing. But surface level, it was all right.
Yeah.
I like this book. It was fine. Not my favorite.
Yeah.
You can read as in-depth, which we did. We did an entire 15-episode season on this. And it is as rich and fulfilling as she worked for it to be.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to go back to something I said, I think, in the first episode, which is the first read at the surface level is meandering. And we are Bryce kind of wading through this, unseeing, not knowing where it's going to go, trying to understand. At the end, when you are Danica, and you see everything, just like Danica left clues in her jacket and on a USB, SJM paved the way for us the entire time.
Yeah. And I have no doubt that whenever we reread this, which will probably be like in 5 years, because we're going to need a break.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that we'll still see things that we missed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, just think about all the things that we missed as we were reading it. We're like, she uses books as shields. Like,
yeah, yeah. You know, like,
what? The otters were saving creatures? And that's because every single sentence was thought out.
Yep.
For 700, almost 800 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, we applaud SJM. Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss.
Clap. Thanks, guys, for being here with us for the season with Crescent City.
Yeah, thanks for sticking around and putting up with our Flame and Shadow spoilers.
Yeah. And, you know, just keep submitting your theories. Keep submitting thoughts. We're going to come back. We will be releasing A House of Sky and Breath, I think like late summer.
Late summer. Next week, we're going to come back with some listener thoughts and theories. So stick around for that. And after that,
we are doing our very first summer book club.
Summer 2024, the Romanticy edition of Book Club for Book Talk by Book Talk for Book Talk.
And the following books that we, where's my list?
We're starting off with From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout.
And then after From Blood and Ash, we are going into A Touch of Darkness by Scarlett St. Clair.
Then we're reading Bride by Allie Hazelwood.
Then we're going to read Feybound by Sarah L. Arifi.
We then go into Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros.
The following week, we'll be reading Angel's Blood by Nalini Singh.
After which, we will be covering The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent.
Following that, we'll be reading The Hurricane Wards by Thea Guazon.
And last but not least, we wrap up the summer season with The Cruel Prince by Holly Black.
We will be asking for your thoughts on these books because this is book club. And if you would like to submit your thoughts, please make sure to follow us on Instagram where we will be collecting everyone's comments on them. And I'm so excited. We've already recorded one.
Yeah, I'm excited to record some of the upcoming ones.
Yep.
Can't wait.
We made sure to have a nice balance between classics and some new ones that we've never read before.
Yeah. So stick around.
Yeah. And those, just so everyone knows, it's going to be one episode per book. And when I say one episode, it's going to be a Tuesday, Thursday episode. So one book a week. Good luck reading with us. Because some people responded in the comments were like, wait, are you telling us we're reading one book a week? And my answer was, yes. Start now.
Yeah, we warned you ahead of time.
Yeah, we warned you, except for the people listening.
Yeah, that's true.
They only have 2 weeks to prepare.
Sorry.
But, you know, that's why you should follow us on Instagram so you can be prepared. We're not blaming you.
We're not shaming you.
We're saying please. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
We look forward to sharing our thoughts next season when we explore the next installment in Sarah J. Maas's Crescent City series. Our deep dive into House of Sky and Breath is scheduled to release late summer 2024. Until then, we're excited for you to join us for our first ever book club. Book Club for Book Talk by Book Talk for Book Talk, the Romantasy edition. New episodes air every Tuesday and Thursday. Check out our Instagram for more information and the books we plan to cover.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk. Bye!
Yay! All right, let's go get your... Go sell your thing. Can I come with you to sell it?
Yes.
For your safety and obviously. To go to Star... I hate that noon just means noon. Because, like, one still feels like noon.
Yeah.
Noon should be considered a group of midday hours.
Noon to three.
Agreed. Agreed. Afternoon, three. Totally.
3 to 6.
Yeah. Evening, if you tell me, hey, what time are we meeting up tomorrow? I'm thinking afternoon. And you tell me one.
Yeah, that's some shit I would do.
I know.